people who ship code that then become vulnerable later because you've leaned on a library that gets compromised, that's going to be tooling. 100%. That's going to be tooling because it's going to be tooling who says, wait, this thing pulls from that. That is vulnerable. This is now vulnerable. Patch, implement, upgrade, whatever you got to do. But lean on tooling for that. It's got to be tooling driven, in my opinion.
How you doing today, Mr. Bromley?
Hey, Chris, I'm doing well. It's summer here in North Texas. It is hot outside. The kids are out of school. It's a wonderful, wonderful day today. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Sadly, not yet moved into my new studio, so let the barrage of I told you so's.
I said I wasn't going to say anything.
But yeah, no, it's great. Sunny out here too. And yeah, we're just getting settled in our new place and looking forward to, I have a little shed out back that I'm going to be able to turn into like an office, and we'll hopefully have a really slick studio soon. I'm not going to put a commitment on that just because I've learned that this is a...
Because you've been there.
Yeah, it's been a more complicated process than I anticipated, and like how you acquire so much stuff in life, I will never understand. But hoarding...
My friend, I have nothing but empathy for you on that one. The number of times I've moved in my life followed up with a, oh my gosh, why do I have so much stuff? I'm right there with you.
All right, let's get into it. GitHub's having a hard time, and we'll start with those. Yeah, a large-scale software supply chain attack dubbed Megalodon infected thousands of GitHub repositories with credential stealing malware in a highly automated campaign that unfolded over a six-hour period on May 18, 2026. According to research published by SafeDep, the attackers pushed 5,718 malicious commits to 5,561 GitHub repositories using forged author identities and dummy accounts. The malicious commits injected compromised GitHub action workflows designed to exfiltrate CI/CD secrets, cloud credentials, SSH keys, OpenID Connect tokens, and other sensitive source code secrets to attacker-controlled infrastructure. SafeDep identified two distinct malware payloads used in the operation. The primary payload inserted a malicious YAML workflow file named sysdiag, which automatically triggered whenever developers created pushes or pull requests. A second, more stealth-focused payload modified existing workflows with a workflow dispatch trigger, effectively creating a dormant backdoor that avoided generating visible CI/CD activity until manually activated through the GitHub API. Researchers emphasized that this approach allowed the malware to remain hidden from standard GitHub actions monitoring and reduced obvious indicators of compromise within repository activity logs. The campaign was first detected when SafeDep's Malicious engine identified malicious behavior inside a GitHub actions workflow bundled with the NPM package, part of the Tiledesk open source chatbot platform. Investigators later discovered that 9 Tiledesk repositories had been backdoored, resulting in maintainers unintentionally distributing compromised code downstream to users and customers. Researchers believe the attackers likely relied on previously stolen developer credentials obtained through earlier supply chain compromises. According to SafeDep security engineer, the attackers may have exhausted their available credential inventory during the six-hour attack window, which could explain why the campaign abruptly stopped. Additional analysis from OX Security found that thousands of repositories remain infected even after public disclosure of the campaign. The company initially identified roughly 3,500 infected repositories, later observing that approximately 2,900 were still compromised more than a week after the attack. Ouch. Researchers also noted similarities between Megalodon and operations associated with the threat group Team PCP. Specifically, Megalodon commits used hard-coded timestamps set to September 17, 2001, and fake bot identities such as CIBot at automated.dev and build-system at noreply.dev. Patterns previously observed in Team PCP-related tooling. However, both SafeDep and OX Security stated there is currently no direct evidence linking Team PCP to the Megalodon campaign. The incident highlights a continuing escalation of attacks targeting developer ecosystems, CI/CD infrastructure, and software supply chains. Researchers warned organizations to audit repositories for malicious GitHub action workflows and suspicious YAML files associated with Megalodon. Additional recommendations include blocking outbound connections to the malware's command and control infrastructure and immediately revoking or rotating potentially exposed credentials, SSH keys, API keys, and authentication secrets. The scale and speed of the campaign demonstrates how attackers are increasingly automated software supply chain compromised to rapidly spread credential theft. malware across open source development environments. So yeah, I mean, this is the same flavor we've been seeing and talking about a lot of over the last couple months. The developer machines are the target, and developer CI/CD infrastructure is a way to spread fast.
Yet another supply chain compromise getting into the CI/CD pipelines there. I do like the fact that everyone kind of gave themselves a little bit of breathing room in saying, there's things that we would use to connect this to Team PCP, but we don't really see it right now. I'm just going to continually to say, Chris, it seems like the circle or the drain around which everyone is circling as they get towards the bottom seems to get smaller and smaller, right, as they start to wind their way around. We've had a ridiculous amount of software supply chain or supply chain style attacks recently. You and I have talked about them multiple times over the past several months, as you've mentioned. And it just seems like we're kind of getting to like the, I don't want to say the crest of the wave. It feels like the wave is still building as we're dealing with this here. I think it's high time that folks really, really lock down their third-party supply chains. They really lock down the tooling that they use, where their libraries come from, the different pieces of software that they use, the trust and permissions that they have in place. It really is time to, you know, if you haven't yet considered kind of implementing measures to lock these down, I won't name any vendors or anything like that, but I can't comment more on when you continue to talk about the same thing and you hear people talking about the same thing again and again and again. The defender's reaction should be, okay, we need to get visibility to this. We need to lock this thing down, right? We can keep talking about the same threat actors again and again, but I would rather folks focus on like, okay, how can I start to implement some defensive measures here? Hat tip to the folks at safedep.io, a really cool looking blog post. Really, really love the technical detail. Just to kind of quickly scroll down and see, there's a lot in here. They go into the configuration, they go into the execution, the scripts, the changes that the adversary did. And really, really cool little like intra-page scrolling CSV rendering as well. It may sound odd, folks, but whenever I read web pages these days, I'm always looking for how folks render certain pieces of data. And I love this little in-window CSV scroller. I think it's pretty sweet. visual UI and vanity aside, a really cool technical walkthrough of how the adversary does what they do. Lots of good insight in here, as I mentioned. Evidence of various IOCs, things you could wrap inside of host-based detections, container-based detections, network-based detections, just a lot to really integrate and put into place here. 5,700 commits in 6 hours, 5,561 repositories, one payload. That just like narrows down the funnel of how much damage you can cause in a little bit of time. So for anyone who's out there wondering like, maybe it's me, maybe not, the timeline for these folks is measured in minutes and seconds these days. It's not days and weeks anymore. So be vigilant.
It also, I find it interesting because it really exposes, and I think I mentioned this on the last show, just like developers have so much access to everything. They're such a prime target for this kind of stuff. And now that attackers are focusing here, you know, how do we let them do their jobs but lock things down? Like I know a lot of the engineers are super careful and cautious, but then there's some cowboy coders, and I may have been one of those back in the day. And it's like sometimes
back in
you
the day, Chris, what are you talking about? Claude is about as cowboy as it gets. Codex is about as cowboy as it gets these days.
Right.
I think the defensive measures have to start with, I'm just going to say it, like I don't have any vendor to promote or anything, but it's got to be done at a technology level. I agree with you. We don't want to slow anybody down in their process of developing and building and shipping. But if it comes at the cost of me losing business or customer trust or something, it's just not worth the price anymore.
Yeah.
It was never worth the price, but what I mean is it's the adversaries are too fast now. There's too much to implement. So I would just simply say like there's got to be, you know, breakpoints or checkpoints
and lean
on tooling. Yeah. Like lean on tooling. It's funny, you and I are recording this, and I believe actually Opus 4.8 just got released today as you and I are recording this. And I'm like, lean on tooling. There's a lot of automated vulnerability scanning and checking coming out. Pass your code through a final sanity check, not through a linter, not through a format checker, not through any sort of standardization, but pass it through and say, hey, I want you to analyze this for vulnerable libraries. Look for tooling that can help you do that. I mean, Chris, the technology exists, the capability exists these days. And it's, you know, I usually try to lean on like homegrown or open source methods as much as possible. But in this situation, I'm just going to lean on technology and say, if you are a company actively building and shipping products and security is a big concern for you and you're having trouble wrapping your arms around it or even trying to figure out what to protect, reach out to a vendor who can help and be like, hey, let me trial and test it and test it. If it disrupts your workflow, you know it's not for you. But I really want security teams out there to analyze that disruption and be like, is this a bad disruption or a good disruption? Some of the folks I work with, the stuff that we build and we ship, we have necessary breakpoints in our code. There are things that our tooling, whether AI driven or not, there are things that our tooling simply cannot do on its own. A human has to approve it. Yeah. And that human is not allowed to approve until they've reviewed. And you know, there's little silly, not silly, but there's little things you can put into place. For example, one of the teams that I work with, we don't allow for AI-driven commit messages. If you have an AI-driven commit message in a PR, it is automatically denied or automatically disapproved.
Because it shows you don't understand.
Shows you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Another one is, you know, when you push a PR, if it's a significant change or something like that, schedule a meeting with someone. It could be 5 minutes, and you need to explain in human terms what it is that you're doing and what it impacts. And like little points here where I force someone, not I, but when you force someone to focus specifically on what it is they're doing and implementing, you can have those conversations about what libraries did you import, but you can also automate a lot of those checks too. So lean on technology, lean on human in the loop to make sure we're not shipping bad, vulnerable code, and then lean on technology to keep it secure. Chris, there's another little third component to this, which is people who ship code that then become vulnerable later because you've leaned on a library that gets compromised.
Yeah.
That's going to be tooling, 100%. Yeah. That's going to be tooling because it's going to be tooling who says, wait, this thing pulls from that. That is vulnerable. This is now vulnerable. Patch, implement, upgrade, whatever you got to do. But lean on tooling for that. It's got to be tooling driven, in my opinion.
I'm noticing a pattern here. The bad guys buy tokens to get better at attacking and compromising, and then the good guys have to buy more tokens to defend against the bad guys. Who's the real winner in all of this?
Dario dollars.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Next up.
Altman coin? I don't know if I'm remembering it.
Okay, another one from GitHub and OX Security. Researchers from OX Security have identified a malicious NPM package named mouse5212-super-formatter that was designed to steal files from Anthropic Claude AI environments by targeting the mount user data directory. According to the report, the directory is used by Claude to manage uploads and generated outputs in the background. The campaign has been given the name Malware Slop. The package presented itself as a utility for archive deployment synchronization and GitHub repository management, masking its actual purpose of unauthorized file collection exfiltration. The malware operates during the NPM post-install phase. Once executed, it attempts to authenticate to GitHub using either an access token found in the victim's environment or a hard-coded fallback token embedded within the package. The malware then checks whether a remote repository exists under a threat actor-controlled GitHub account. If no repository is present, it creates one automatically and recursively uploads files from the local system into that repository. Researchers said the stolen files were organized into randomly named directories to separate different theft sessions. To conceal its activity, the package also generates a fake network connections log intended to make the operation appear like legitimate diagnostic or synchronization behavior. OX Security noted that the package disguised itself as an internal archive deployment utility that validated GitHub repositories, captured lightweight network status information, and synchronized workspace files. However, the underlying functionality was focused entirely on collecting and transferring local data to attacker-controlled infrastructure. At the time of reporting, the malicious package remained available on the NPM registry and had been downloaded approximately 676 times, although researchers noted that the number of actual installations was unclear. The GitHub account associated with the operation had already been removed. OX Security observed that the GitHub account was created on May 26, 2026, only hours before the first malicious version of the package was uploaded to NPM, indicating a rapidly assembled campaign. One of the more notable aspects of the campaign was the exposure of the attacker's own GitHub token and account details within the malware itself. Researchers suggested this could indicate the malware was generated or heavily assisted by AI tools without proper operational security practices. OX Security warned that the reduced barrier to creating malicious code using AI technologies will likely lead to an increase in low-quality but functional malware campaigns, particularly in the open-source ecosystem such as NPM. The researchers also predicted that threat actors may increasingly imitate advanced persistent threat groups while leveraging AI-assisted tooling to scale software supply chain attacks. So I feel like that's a water is wet statement at the end there, but...
just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you surprised that this happened? Hats off. So the folks who did this, actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Chris, and you mentioned this too, I believe they come from Ox Security. Ox, I feel like we've talked about you before, so glad to have you here again, I think. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, we've seen Ox a lot over the last couple of weeks, but I say yeah. OX, so thank you for educating me.
I'm only going off of the logo, which looks like an ox, but oh. I'm actually now tempted. I'm curious if it's Vox. I'm not sure, but nonetheless, that's neither here nor there. Just in from Ox News. First off, the banner of their page is that the CVE is dead. Welcome to the Mythos era of AppSec. We're going to leave that to the side for right now. Chris, I don't want to read anything that invalidates our patch shirts, if you will. However, more importantly, drilling into kind of what they've done here. Guys, great watermark on all these pictures, by the way. Don't worry, no one's going to steal these. But going through and looking at kind of the flow here, I appreciate the lean in on what this is happening. But Chris, I'll be honest with you, it doesn't really differ from any of the different supply chain stuff we've seen before, right? .env or environment variable abuse taking place, GitHub token abuse and things like that, file exfiltration up to another GitHub account and whatnot. It seems like a pretty run-of-the-mill malicious Git activity. Nothing I would, you know, be super, super concerned about, if you will. And when I say super concerned about, folks, what I mean is this isn't a high level of sophistication that we haven't seen before or anything like that. It's just bad scripts doing stuff, a malicious NPM package. I think where it gets perhaps a little more concerning is the files or the directory path that it goes after, that /mnt-user-data. And I think it's probably targeting some very specific files there, which is likely what we don't want to have leaked out. But hats off to the folks for calling it malware slop. Definitely taking advantage of a new industry term, AI slop, and makes me wonder if this is kind of a little bit of a shout out, or not a shout out, but maybe a little bit of a demeaning negative comment to the threat actor of being like, yeah, this isn't really that crazy of a piece of malware. You just wrote some slop.
They hard coded their credentials into the code, it looked like, or something. So, yeah.
Hence the sloppiness, yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah. But nonetheless, hey, it's, you know, everyone starts somewhere, Chris. I mean, I wouldn't call my kids learning how to ride a bike training wheels slop, but, you know, that's okay. We'll give them time to learn.
This next one I included because I spent a lot of time hanging out around these places as a teenager, and it's another example of our friends. Or, well, the friends is the wrong word. Shiny hunters who've been all over the news lately. So convenience store giant 7-Eleven disclosed a data breach tied to an attack that occurred on April 8th, 2026, involving systems that contain franchise-related documents. According to the breach notification filed with the Maine Attorney General's office, personal information, including names and addresses, was likely accessed during the incident. While the company did not publicly disclose how many individuals were impacted, breach tracking platform Have Been Pwned later estimated that the breach affects approximately 185,300 people. The breach has been linked to the extortion group Shiny Hunters, which claimed responsibility in mid-April after listing 7-Eleven on its leak site. The group alleged that it had stolen roughly 600,000 Salesforce records from the company and demanded payment before April 21st. After the ransom deadline passed, the attackers reportedly offered the data for sale on a Russian language hacking forum. The leaked data set was eventually published online and subsequently analyzed by Have Been Pwned. According to the analysis, the exposed information aligns with the details disclosed by 7-Eleven and includes names, physical addresses, email addresses, and dates of birth. Have Been Pwned also noted that a smaller subset of affected individuals had additional data fields exposed, although the article does not specify the exact nature of that information. The publication emphasized that the scale of the leak appears smaller than the 600,000 record claim initially made by Shiny Hunters, with validated impact estimated at just over 185,000. The article also highlights a broader trend involving Shiny Hunters targeting Salesforce environments over the year. The group has reportedly focused on compromising major organizations through phishing attacks, abuse of third-party integrations, and exploitation of configuration weaknesses. Following a February warning from Mandiant regarding increased Shiny actors' branded activity. The group publicly claimed responsibility for attacks against organizations including Instructure, Vimeo, Wynn Resorts, Vercel, and Medtronic. The incident illustrates a continuing risk associated with cloud application ecosystems and third-party platform integrations. Salesforce environments often contain large amounts of customer, operational, and business data, making them attractive targets for extortion groups. In the case of 7-Eleven, the compromise of franchise document systems and related personnel information demonstrates how attackers are increasingly targeting enterprise SaaS platforms as a path to monetize datasets and leverage for extortion campaigns. So yeah, it seems like Shiny Hunters doesn't have a particular industry or group they go after. They're just like out to get what they can.
I think if you have a pulse, they're interested. That's how I'm framing it. Chris, I brought up this related article over at Security Week that actually ties back to something we talked about in February. Not sure if you remember this, but there was a warning that came out. I think folks had uncovered Shiny Hunters infrastructure targeting more than 100 organizations out there. And I'm not saying this is exactly related to each other, but man, what a tear these guys have been on recently. Mm-hmm. Shiny Hunters going after 7-Eleven. By the way, a screenshot here of one of the nicest 7-Elevens I've ever seen.
That is one of the nicest 7-Elevens.
Like wood paneled siding and everything. Like, wow. The 7-Elevens I went to when I was a kid, to your point earlier, it looked very different than this, but hat tip to 7-Eleven for
I remember they used
image.
To play classical music outside
because
they thought it would keep us away, but I'm not a fan of classical music.
Yeah, here's the thing, folks. We are about a month and a half away from July 11th, which is Free Slurpee Day, just to put a pin in that when we get there. But that being said, you know, I this is another one of those things of like, hey, we've got a very, very active threat group who's out there. And Chris, to your point of like, they don't really seem to go after any particular industry. They just seem to be all over the place. I can't agree with that more. And that should put everyone on their toes. You need to be vigilant. Yes, they've gone after Salesforce instances recently, but that doesn't mean they only go after those things. What that means is everyone needs to be vigilant. Watch out for their level of attack. I'm not even going to go into the different IOCs and everything listed here. I'm just going to say some of the advices or pieces of advice dropped in. Restricting VPNs, VDI information, restricting access, just implement that zero trust, implement those access levels, and just really lock down your environment. Because this group, as you mentioned, has no filter on who they go after, very little warning, right? And they are very public about what they do. That's the other part of the problem here is they're public. It will get publicized. It will get disclosed, whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not. So it's just another reason to just stay vigilant in what you do out there. Watch out for these threat actors.
Yeah, and I wonder if the name Shiny Hunters has something to do with, like, they go after whatever shiny. Does that, am I reaching?
I'm not sure. It might be. I don't know. I've never thought about it that way. It could be. I just look at it as they are shiny, meaning they draw a lot of attention. Right. I look at it maybe the other way, but who knows? Who knows? One day you and I will find out.
Oh, man, we're going to write a book on threat actor naming one day.
I think we'll be here actually maybe one day reporting on their indictments, but we'll see. Fingers crossed. I can only hope.
Yeah. All right. Last one I got for us today. Our friends at CISA have issued an urgent warning about a critical vulnerability in the Lightspeed cPanel plugin tracked as CVE-2026-48172, which is already being actively exploited in the wild. The flaw allows privilege escalation through improper privilege management, classified under CWE-266. According to the advisory, an authenticated cPanel user can abuse a vulnerability to execute arbitrary scripts with root-level privileges, effectively giving attackers full administrative control over affected servers. The issue is especially concerning for shared hosting in multi-tenant cloud environments where multiple users operate on the same infrastructure. In those scenarios, even a low-privileged account can become an entry point for a complete system compromise. Attackers could execute arbitrary commands, modify server configurations, establish persistent backdoors, and potentially access or manipulate data belonging to other customers hosted on the same server. The article notes that the absence of proper privilege boundaries significantly increased the overall impact of exploitation. CISA added the CVE to its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog on May 26, 2026, confirming that the exploitation actively has already been observed. Federal agencies and affected organizations have been instructed to remediate the vulnerability by May 29, 2026, underscoring the severity and urgency of the issue. While there is currently no confirmed evidence connecting the flaw to ransomware operations, CISA warned that the vulnerability presents a highly attractive target for threat actors seeking privilege escalation, lateral movement, or broader access within the hosting environments. The guidance from CISA emphasizes immediate mitigation efforts. Organizations are advised to apply vendor patches or mitigation instructions as soon as they become available. In environments where patches cannot yet be deployed, administrators are encouraged to restrict user permissions and closely monitor systems for suspicious privilege escalations, attempts at such, or unauthorized script execution. The article also mentions that some organizations may need to discontinue use of the affected plugin entirely if no safe mitigation path exists. Additional recommendations include following binding operational directive 22-01, guidance for cloud services, and strengthening access controls across hosting infrastructure. Because Lightspeed technologies are widely deployed across hosting providers and enterprise web environments, the vulnerability presents a broad operational risk. A successful exploit could result in complete server compromise, customer data exposure, or significant service disruption. The article concludes that organizations should treat this CVE as a high priority security issue and respond with immediate patching, stronger monitoring, and tighter privilege enforcement to reduce the likelihood of compromise. So yeah, I threw this one in there because I know how widely cPanel is used and in how it is used by a lot of folks who are technical, but maybe not super technical. So a lot of people hosting websites and running little businesses doing that kind of thing. So this is a pretty major vulnerability that could affect a lot of people.
This is another one of those situations where, folks, in case you haven't heard us talk about this before, CISA's KEV, or the known exploited vulnerability list, I think we've actually determined on this podcast to be kind of like the final tripwire. If you needed a, why should I care about this? This is the final, this is why you care about this, which means it has made the rounds of assessment of CVE, of patching, hopefully, potentially. And now it's being actively exploited by adversaries. So in case anyone needed a reason to care, here it is. To Chris's point, this is a plugin that may be utilized by lots of folks out there and is likely, if you don't have a patching cycle in place, is likely going to be compromised as well. One of the things that was kind of interesting to call out there, Chris, was very dangerous in multi-tenant hosting environments where there's multiple users. Folks, anytime you have more users reaching in, usually authentication standards go down. It's harder to detect and find things. It just creates a really messy situation. And a lot of times adversaries can use this to run arbitrary commands, alter configurations, and likely kick out legitimate users to create their own accounts. And it's just not a situation you want to be in. If anyone here needs any sort of lighthouse or beacon to look for, when CISA requires that federal government agencies upgrade this thing within, you know, two or three days after yeah. publishing, take that as your I should care about this.
The thing. Government does not generally move that fast.
No, they do not. So this is definitely, yeah, this is an emergency directive in any way, shape, or form. So for anyone who's running this technology, patch. For anyone who doesn't know if you're running this technology, go and figure it out. And I would also recommend, while you're there, implement some logging or some sort of automated procedures if you can to keep you ahead of these types of things. But yeah, for anyone who's listening, the KEV is usually our last strike, kind of final tripwire here, in which case, all right, it's time to care. It's time to patch now.
Awesome. Awesome, Matt. Thanks for coming and doing this again. Sounds like you're out with your kids doing something fun.
It is. It's summertime here. It's pool time. They are far enough away that I thought I weren't going to hear them too much, but they're out having fun at the pool.
Awesome. Okay, sir. I look forward to it next week.
Thanks, Chris. See you later.
See you, man. And that brings us to the end of another Intel Chat. You can support this show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend or subscribing and giving us a rating or leaving a comment on your chosen podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation and access the intel we talk about in real time, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.